Red Arrow Baker today. I'm Mark River. I'm with the Duke University Wetlands Center, and I'm in the final year of my PhD research, working with Kurt Richardson. And today I'm going to talk to you about the transport of iron and phosphorus by these oxygenic nanoparticles forming in the stream or near the stream in the base flow of the Southern Piedmont. So before we get into it, too deep, we need to talk about what's a particle, what's solute, and what do we use to find those. I'm going to actually talk about what kind of particles do we see in the base flow. There's quite a wide variety. It's pretty cool. Look at a rule in an urban stream. And then I want to talk about some separation techniques, quality controls that we've used in order to try to break up particles and solutes into different fractions for base flow. And then I'll show you a time series that I've taken over the last year to get a feel for how much iron and phosphorus are actually transported by these oxygenated particles. And there's very little of this in the literature. I'm really excited about it because I think not people, a lot of people look at this small fraction. So let's get started. This is my study area, generally speaking. The Piedmont lies between the coastal plain and the Appalachian Mountains, and literally the foot of the mountain, and really beautiful area, rolling hills in general. There's a lot of reservoirs. 10,000 lakes is probably a lot catchier than 10,000 reservoirs, but there's probably somewhere, there's thousands of reservoirs anyway, and the reservoirs are really important in the Piedmont because most people get their drinking water from surface water. So almost every one of these reservoirs you see here provides drinking water to a city or community. My watershed that I study provides 500,000 people in Raleigh with their drinking water. So these are really important water resources to protect and to understand. And another thing about the Piedmont is very iron rich. So upland soils tend to be 4, 5, 6% iron, and groundwater has a residence time, some studies with isotopes that have estimated between 15 to 25 years. So very long residence time of groundwater, which gives plenty of time for iron reduction, so the groundwater tends to be very iron rich. And you'll see these seeps everywhere. If you walk along the streams or the uplands, you'll see these little groundwater seeps that are very rich in iron deposits. So I saw some of these early on in my research, wanted to learn more about kind of iron phosphorus banding, because these are also very rich in phosphorus coming out to the stream. So before we think too much about particles, how would you define a particle, being that most people don't actually use TEM or other instruments in their day-to-day research? So if you haven't got to know the 0.45 filter very well, here's one of my SEM images from it. First thing you'll notice, if you notice my little scale bar here, it's not like it's a bunch of 0.45 micron holes. The vast majority of 0.45 filters are these kind of defective pore size. So it's a whole bunch of different size of pores. Maybe on the whole, it's somewhere around 0.45 effective filtration. Maybe not, if it stays macropore flow. Notice there's some pretty good sized macropores in here where a particle's much larger than 0.45 microns can work their way through. I actually did filter some base flow through here. You see some clay particles that got cut back, but a lot of those are could possibly have gone through. One of the first experiments I did, starting out trying to learn a little bit about the Piedmont, is just took some water and used different sizes of filters on it. And as you can see, based on the filter I use, glass fiber, or different types of 0.45 manufacture, 0.1 centrifuging, both the quote unquote dissolved iron and the dissolved reactive phosphorus will vary. To me, it's pretty good evidence you got a lot of filtration artifacts coming through, especially with this Piedmont base flow. And so that has implications when we try to start to understand these systems ecologically. If we just look at like some USGS data, maybe if you guys have used this publicly available data. This is from one of my streams at base flow. If you look at the unfiltered values, maybe 700 micrograms per liter would be a kind of typical unfiltered iron value in base flow, which is still quite a bit of iron moved down the streams. So if you thought, well, how much of that time is solute or dissolved, then you looked at their dissolved data, the 0.45 microns, you might come to the conclusion that maybe over half or two-thirds of the iron is actually in the dissolved or soluble form. But if you take those samples and use a much smaller filter, let's say a 1 kilodalton, centrifugal filter, which is the smallest filter on the market, you get a very different result, right? A couple orders of magnitude less soluble iron. So I would argue that we really don't understand these systems from a nanoparticle solute perspective, because we're just lumping a whole lot of stuff into the soluble fraction that really is not indeed a true solute, and probably has different ecosystem implications for that. So that leads me into what kind of particles we deal with here in the Piedmont. I got some data from a rural stream and an urban stream in my watershed. So if you go out just during a nice base flow, there's no visible particles, you got a turbidity, maybe 5 NTUs, you could hardly measure TSS. And these things are super clear. Streaming, you wouldn't actually enter many particles. If you take a drop of that and evaporate on a TBM grid and look at it on a TBM, there's millions and millions of particles in a single drop of base solution. I think it's pretty cool. It gets me really excited. And you'll also notice how small these are. If this is a half micron CLR, you know, almost all these particles in base flow are going through our 0.45 filter, which is why we get such large values when we look at the USGS public data. I also want to point out a few different kinds of particles. We have some interesting kind of, what I would say are some kind of biotic particles in here. I'll talk a little bit more about those later on, but they're just ubiquitous in these unfiltered base flow samples, depending on the season. You get some kind of clay-type aluminosilicate particles in here. Then you have a lot of these tiny, tiny little nanoparticles, which I'll talk more about and show individually. One thing I wasn't showing in that diagram, it also occurs in base flow diatoms. Okay, so they tend to be pretty large. There's a beautiful species of diatoms in the Piedmont base flow. But they're big. We also have a lot of crystalline particles, which originate generally from the upland as a product of weathering processes. The biggies we have are illite, kaolinite, quartz, and feldspar. And with the exception of quartz, those all contain quite a bit of aluminum. So if they're crystalline, they generally have aluminum, and they tend to be pretty big. On the other hand, those little bitty nanoparticles I was showing tend to be amorphous in nature. So you hit them with electron diffraction or X-ray diffraction. There's no long-term crystalline structure in these. And the chemistry is quite different. So instead of aluminum, silicate, you know, there's virtually no aluminum in these particles. And they're really rich in iron. And they also almost always have calcium, silica, and phosphorus. And the amount of phosphorus in my system depends on the rural versus the urban stream. So it's the groundwater chemistry is actually driving the chemistry of these particles. If you zoom in on some of these little nanoparticle aggregates, so that's the figure A, they're actually an agglomeration of little individual nanoparticles on like a 3, 4, 5 nanometer scale. This is a 5 nanometer scale bar here at the bottom. So these are like tiny little nanoparticles that tend to agglomerate to maybe like a 20 or 30 nanometer overall particle. And then they're just this loose fluffy mass floating down the stream. And there's no long-term order here, as we see with our electron diffraction FFT, versus some of these other more crystalline particles, titanium or iron, or this is actually zircon particle in the stream, which have really high crystallinity. So these are definitely amorphous particles, no matter how far you zoom in on them. Now, we also, I mentioned those cool-looking biotic particles. Yesterday, there were some sessions talking about biotic oxidation of reduced iron. I think these are probably some type of remnant of that, a sheath from an iron oxidizer or something along these lines. So my research doesn't break apart biotic versus abiotic, but there's probably a combination of the two that are resulting in these particles being transported because the chemistry is very similar, very rich in iron with some calcium, silicon, and phosphorus. I mentioned the iron-aluminum split. So here's just a rough clustering. This is particle by particle. Each dot's an individual nanoparticle that I analyzed the chemistry with energy dispersion spectroscopy on the TEM. And we see the amorphous particles tend to cluster with really high iron and virtually no aluminum, like we saw on the graphs earlier. Whereas the crystalline particles can have quite high aluminum, their aluminosilicates, a lot of them, and varying amounts of iron. Some of them are quite rich in iron with coatings, others hardly any iron on them. So we're going to use this to our advantage when we look at our separation techniques to see if you can separate out these and actually quantify this optogenic fraction. So there's very little knowledge in the literature about, you know, what's going on with these particles, how much iron is transported, what's the bioavailability of them. So I want to start to tease out some of that, thinking about these fractionations. So talk about my separation technique, quality control I used, and show you guys some actual data from that. So we can use our old friend Stokes. If you're not familiar with Stokes' law, pretty cool guy. Play around with pendulums to figure out settling rates. And we can use the fact that the diameter, the size of these particles is quite different than the rest of the stream. You've got the diatoms and crystalline particles very big, you've got tiny little amorphous nanoparticles. And then also the density of the particles that can also be used to fractionate. So I came up with a 90-minute centrifugation in just a standard old 50 mil tube at 4,000 Gs, which is pretty strong centrifuging. And that gets you down to about 50 nanometers hydrodynamic diameter. So I'm separating out. You know, anything under 50 nanometers stays in the supernatants, and everything more or less greater than gets settled out in these. So then what we can do, that gives us actually now three fractions of our base flow. We can take the raw value minus the supernatant, that's this crystalline coarse particulate organic matter fraction. We can take our supernatant wet chemistry minus the 1 kilodalton. Now that's our optogenic amorphous fraction. And then the 1 kilodalton that passes through, that's our quote-unquote truly dissolved fractions. So now we've got three fractions of base flow. based on an actual physical parameter of the particles versus an arbitrary 4-5 cutoff for two fractions. So I feel like that's a strong improvement. But now I have to show you that this actually works in the condition that I'm actually analyzing the optogenic fraction. So once you take your centrifuge particles, if you put those on a filter and run an X-ray diffraction on them, you see our casting characters are mica, kaolinite, quartz, and a little bit of montmorillonite in there. On the other hand, when you take the supernatant and you filter it through a 20 nanometer filter, it's about 2 liters worth of supernatant, which took all day. You see basically no X-ray diffraction pattern on it. Although it's super rich in iron, this is actually the majority of the iron in the sample. So it's a very amorphous non-crystalline form of iron. So there's one quality control. I also looked at took off part of these filters and looked at them under the SCN, and you see a big massive quartz particles and little clays and diatoms and such. Whereas if this is the supernatant over here, it's just basically a tiny little, look like iron oxide nanoparticles. So this all looks like it's getting a nice separation between those two based on that centrifuging. And then the wet chemistry backs that up as well. I mentioned the strong aluminum signal in the crystalline particles. So here the crystalline mineral particles are about 95% of the aluminum in a filtered sample, whereas the supernatants had about 5% of the aluminum. Mm-hmm. Now on the other hand, the supernatant has the majority of the iron, whereas the crystalline particles only have maybe a third or so of the overall iron. So I feel like I'm getting a nice separation technique. And so then now I'm going to show you a one-year time series. I've gone out and taken monthly base flow samples, fractionated into the three fractions, and here's the optogenic fraction. So it's transporting, if we look at iron, that amorphous optogenic iron, over half, maybe two-thirds of the iron for both the rural and urban stream are being transported by these amorphous optogenic nanoparticles. That thing's pretty cool because we don't know anything about this fraction. And then there's somewhere around maybe 300-500 micrograms per liter, depending on the season, of iron being transported by these particles, which, interestingly enough, is pretty close to what we saw with the USGS public data. There's somewhere maybe 400-500 micrograms per liter going through their filter. So it's probably mostly these optogenic nanoparticles is actually their measure, and also they're just calling it dissolved. And I mentioned that a little bit, that phosphorus to iron ratio. We see a particle by particle, the urban stream consistently much higher phosphorus for the same amount of iron as opposed to the rural stream. And then these are the wet chemistry and the bulk samples. So both of those are showing this urban, it's quite a different signal on the urban, probably because of different groundwater chemistry and this incorporation phenomenon versus surface sorption. So this is my last slide to wrap up. I think this 4-4-5 filter is an issue. It's limiting our understanding of iron and phosphorus mechanisms in natural ecosystems. And streams are going to have a lot larger particulate fraction than we think, or if you just look at public data, you might be misled into thinking there's a lot larger dissolved constituency than there really is. These optogenic particles, we don't know hardly anything about them. They're amorphous, they're a lot of surface area, highly reactive. They're generally quantified as dissolved, but then indeed they're transferring over half the iron and close to half of the phosphorus, rapid phosphorus, at base load and Piedmont, which is kind of cool. And we really don't know what the role of these particles is on downstream ecosystems, right? We could have these phenomena like the iron curtain and reservoir sediments. I showed you all these reservoirs, these particles are getting up in reservoirs. Every single day you could have this little coating of reactive iron on top of reservoir setting, maybe protecting from phosphate release from cold water. Or you could have the bioavailability of these nanoparticles could be very different than true orthophosphate, which is what it gets lumped into if you call it a dissolved fraction. So that's it. I appreciate any questions y'all might have.